Welcome to Entrepreneurship by Design, the Dr. C podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Caroline, or simply Dr. C. Tune in every 2 to 5 weeks, every Monday, as we explore the unique journeys of entrepreneurs. Our podcast sheds light on the paths entrepreneurs have taken in their respective industries. Each episode, we dive into the stories of entrepreneurs, their challenges, triumphs, and the insights gained along their journey. We believe in the power of innovation, resilience, and the entrepreneurial spirit that drives success. Together, we'll learn from a diverse array of entrepreneurs united by their passion for making a difference. Now is the time to unlock the secrets of entrepreneurship. Now is the time to be inspired, to learn, and to craft your own path to success. Join me, Dr. C, as we embark on this journey together. Welcome to today's episode, where we have the privilege of diving into the inspiring journey of an entrepreneur whose dedication to financial empowerment has transformed lives. Join us as we explore the remarkable story of Christiana, whose vision and leadership have propelled her to success as a published author and financial expert. With 4 insightful books already published and 2 more in the works, Christiana is on a mission to empower individuals with the knowledge and tools to thrive in their financial endeavors. Stay tuned as we dive into her extraordinary journey and gain valuable insights along the way. If you want to hear more enlightening stories like Christiana, be sure to join our community by subscribing so we can continue to cultivate valuable episodes. And thank you so much, Christiana, for being here today. It is such a pleasure to have you. And I would love for you to just dive into your journey, how you got here today, and then we can go a little bit deeper.
Well, I guess it should start off with when I was in Pasco, Mexico, and there is a place right off of La Plaza, if any of you have ever visited, it's lovely, called Cafe Taza. And they put on open mics on Friday nights. And it was a really great pastime for us kiddos because we didn't have a mall. We didn't have the typical things that most young people get to do. And so I saw the poster with my girlfriend and I said, let's go to that. And we listened to people come up and stand up and read their poetry. And she elbowed me with her bony elbow and said, you need to get up there. And so I said, I don't know, I'm not ready yet. I've been writing most of my life, but you know, what's a 14-year-old gonna bring to the table? And she said, well, let's find out. So she wrote my name and she made me get up there. And I stood there with my little notebook paper just shaking. And I read a poem, one of my first ones that I actually was kind of proud of. And I got a lot of resounding acclaim for that. And then they asked me to sign up on the next round. And I said, oh, okay. And so, of course, my mouth was dry. My tongue was too big in my mouth. And it was awful. But I went through it. I muscled through it. And then I just was always writing. It never stopped. It's almost like a haunting. When I describe it in my writing, writing is almost like a haunting where you just have this message that has to come out. And you can try and ignore it, but after a while, it's just going to be that commercial in your head going over and over and over again. And so I honor it by letting it out on paper, basically. And so I was writing one day in Mrs. Grusdorf's class in Taos High. And she said, what are you writing? And I said, oh, just some poetry. She said, you know, the bell rang, right? And I was like, getting my stuff together. She said, can I read it? And I said, sure. So she started reading it. And she said, Christiana, this is really good. Can I have it? And I said, sure, yeah, by all means. So she typed it up and she submitted it to a contest and actually won. I won a scholarship and I got to learn with some amazing authors, one of them being Jim Spiegel. And he, down in Santa Fe, we got to work together and collaborate and he taught me some skills. And then later on, I got to attend Jane Hardy's writing group, which is just continuous writing. The first time I wrote, we couldn't wear our shoes in the house, which is pretty typical in Taos because it's very dusty. And this guy took off his shoes and I thought I was going to die because it was so stinky. And I'm like, this guy's feet stink so bad. La la la. And I thought, okay, well, this is just an exercise. Well, then we had to read these things out loud to our group. And I was mortified. You're sitting next to me, he's kind of inching away from me as I was reading that. And then later on, I just started collecting more and more poems, and people would ask me to write for things in the journals or in the house news. They would put a little thing in there and say, "Hey, can you add a little something here and there?" And it just kind of grew that way. Well, then I moved to San Antonio, and of course, I looked for open mics, and I found one, which was Sun Poet Society, and Rod Stryker is the host. And I went and I just was blown away with the talent, and I felt like I had found my community. And the Sun Poet Society put on a literary magazine, and I was able to be part of the board. So then I became an assistant editor to him. And the literary magazine was bi-quarterly, so we got together and published these things from people from all over the world and art from all over the world, which was so cool. And then we got asked to read at the book festival in Austin, Texas. We just got to kind of build that. Well, then I met this guy called Tom the World Poet. He was this crazy guy from Australia who lived in Austin, Texas. So we went to his house, and books, just books and books and books and books and stacks of books that he had published. And I said, "Well, who's publishing you?" And he said, "Me." And I said, "Well, how do you do that?" And he said, "This is how you do it. You write, you type it, you print it, you fold it, you sell it." And I was like, oh, that easily, huh? I mean, this guy had books from over a decade in his bag that he would just pass out as business cards, basically. And I thought, well, I don't really want to be like that, but I do want to get to the level. Well, meanwhile, Rod Steiger had gotten a book deal with Pecan Grove Press, and we were all just so excited for him. But when I looked at the contracts and everything, I was like, I don't really want to be confined to this one book and having to sell this one book for the rest of my life. And I got an offer, but I just didn't really like it. And I liked what Tom was doing, and I liked what Rod was doing, but I was like, I want to make it my own. So I started my own publishing company. I didn't even know what I was doing. And it's called Eyes Mind Press because it's mine, Eyes Mind Press. And I started collaborating my work. And of course, I was a perfectionist, and it took way too long to launch my first one. And I got the artwork, and the artist was amazing. His name is Scott Pekus. He's just great. We published him multiple times in the journal. And I was his slave, like anything he wanted. But then he was like, "No, I'm your slave." And I'm like, "I don't know how to do this. This is collaborating." So anyway, I got my first one done. I used Microsoft Publisher. Microsoft Publisher, and I got it done. I went to the printer, got all my babysitting money that I had, and because I was a stay-at-home mom, so I didn't really have my own income. So I went and I printed it up. And then, of course, Rod wanted to do a book launch. I didn't know what that was. So I had this book launch, and I sold all my copies that day. And it was like 100 copies just off the shelves. And I only sold them for $5. And so I took the proceeds from that, socked it away, and started thinking about my next one. Because for me, writing is an evolution of me. So what I wrote 20 years ago doesn't necessarily reflect who I am today. It got me where I am today, but it's not the end all be all. My language changed, my imagery changed, everything started to evolve. And I wanted to chronologically order that in my publications. So the first one is called Follow Your Bliss. Miss Jenkins from Taos High gave me that card as a graduation. It's Joan of Arc on the front. It's Follow Your Bliss. And I was like, "Scott, can you do this?" So he did. And the second one is Him and Jim, because I had just had my son born and I'd been married. And then the third one is We Three. And it's because I have two boys and my husband, so it was the three. And then I was photographed a sculpture from Africa that my brother gave me because he travels all over the world and he'll tell you all about it, believe me. But anyway, the sculpture has this man with these two kids, and I thought that was cool. And then my fourth one was really from the heart. It was really when I felt like I'd stepped into my own. And then granted, that was like 17 years later of writing, right? And it's called Dragon Within. I just almost forgot
There's
the
so many titles.
I know. And Dragon Within is when I really came into my own as an author. I really felt like, but you know, to me it's just poetry, and poetry can just be such a just a fancy, just a relieving of the pressure, like the valve gets the nozzle off. So having a real project, having something that actually takes time and editing and thoughts and all of that. I mean, I just kind of was a lazy writer, I guess. I just felt like poetry was enough for me. So I wanted to master one before I actually took on another. So, you know, a lot of my writing friends have novels that they've been working on since they were born. And they have all these projects that are never ending for them. But I just never really wanted the magnum opus. I wanted several chapters. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so incredible what you've been able to accomplish. And I don't think you're a lazy writer by any means. I feel like it's being able to really pour your heart and soul into something. And it doesn't have to be grandiose, it can be short and sweet because it's just based off of what you're going through and that evolution that you've experienced in life and through your writing. And I want to go back to even before you started your publishing company because I didn't know that part.
Oh.
Which is great, which is great. We're going to talk about that. But
Yeah.
I'm curious because a lot of people might want to write a book or have a poetry book or something similar to that, but they want to be a published author. And I'm curious because you had different like examples of what it could be by self-publishing or going with a publisher. You said you didn't like the contract. With some people that are maybe wanting to have a publisher going to for a publishing company. What is the difference between self-publish and being able to work with a publisher from your experience?
Right. Well, there's some out there, and this is just kind of a Christiana Mama advice. If they're asking you for money, don't do it. Because the only reason why they're asking you for money is so that they can keep pulling you along. And, you know, I got published in a Reader's Digest knockoff thing, and they're like, and you can get exposure, but you gotta, you know. And of course, with my meager wages, zero. I was like, okay, I'll give this a shot, and but I'm not going to do anything else. And so number one, don't let them solicit you for money. That's not okay. Granted, you will get that notoriety of getting published in their circulation, but when you really look at the whole scheme of it, how much circulation are you getting, right? The other pitfall is, well, you're not really accomplished. And this has changed dramatically over the last 20 years. In fact, some of our best-selling authors are self-published now in the whole scheme of things. And they've broke the mold. Thank you, predecessors, for doing that. But that was the big curtail is if you self-publish, you're never going to reach the bestseller. You're never going to reach that level of laureate that you would like. And so people like Rod, who are willing to, you know, sink their teeth into this. I mean, and this guy is incredibly professional, incredibly well-crafted, and he's willing to do that to get that. And now he's been posting lately, and this is a shout out to you, man, that his books are prominently displayed in one of the local bookstores, and that's really great. And I'm so happy for him. But one of the contractual agreements is that you won't really actually be free from selling that one item until you reach the publication limits. Now, Amazon has come up with something that was really cool, and I'm kind of anti-conglomerate, as you can tell, a little rebel in me. But his process is actually very obtainable and very cost effective. And it also gives you the exposure and the ISBN number and all of those things that my little chapter books never did. Nobody can get them. In fact, people are like, I'm gonna research you. I'm like, good luck, bro. Because that was before internet. Okay. That's how old I am. And so this has led me to lead up to this. I am actually gonna answer your question. So when you self-publish now, there's been predecessors, and I encourage you guys to look into them and find out what their steps are. But for me, just registering your book and establishing an ISBN number is not the hardest thing. You just have to go through the Secretary of State and things like that to register it and copyright it. And then, of course, the publication costs, right? So it's almost like now with Amazon and other publishing companies, it is a good avenue to take. And maybe self-publishing isn't the right fit if you just really want to make sure it's on the shelves and accessible. So there's There's both of those because there is a little bit of marketing when you have your book in a massive distributing platform, which is now provided, you know. And so now I'm actually working on my fifth book, which is a greatest hits collection of the four that I actually want to salvage. And the new poetry that I have, and it's called The Yellow Umbrella. So I'm kind of at the same crossroads as most people are. I was like, which avenue do I want to take? Do I want it accessible? Do I want it marketable? Or do I just want it for me and that? So I'm kind of leaning over to the big market guy. But I'm still doing my research, to be honest with you. And I encourage people to do that and talk to anybody and everybody, even if they've only published like the handbook to screwdrivers, talk to them. Find out what their process was. And that way you can make a really educated decision.
Absolutely, because everyone's experience is going to be completely different, but the more information you have, the more you can make a solid foundation of, okay, I have an informed decision I'm making because I have all of these different tactics and different opinions and experiences as well. So it gives you a well-rounded versus just taking it at face value and talking to one person. But I think it's great that you did your research too, and you're even exploring. And to kind of take it a step back again, I'm curious with starting your publishing company, what was that like for you? Because I know you were kind of figuring everything out and you're like, I'm just gonna do it.
Well, I again am so fortunate to be in these amazing experiences. I mean, even just meeting you, honestly, I was thinking back at how everything is so serendipitous and perfectly aligned. But I was able to meet with this one lady, and oh gosh, she was such a pro at branding, even before branding was even a thing, okay? Like she had the iron on t-shirt, she had the cap, she plugged herself like crazy. And we would all just kind of sit back and just like, wow, how did you do that? And so she gave me some advice on just like, just put it out there. Who cares? And I'm like, okay. And now that's the big thing on our social media is like, just get it done, put it out there. It doesn't matter. So I think for me, it was like, number one, coming up with a name. Number two, branding it, making it out there. And so you got to put yourself out there. I mean, we network as our businesses, right? Well, you same thing with writing. You've got to be at every open mic, every slam contest. Just make sure you put on your armor for that one. And then, every single festival and la la la, anything you say yes and you do it and you plug, plug, plug. And now it's so great because you can have all of this social media and you can have all these other things. But back in the day when MySpace was just budding, you can imagine how limiting that was. So when I would say, hey, here, I got my book here, EyesMind Press put it on. Whose EyesMind? Well, it's mine. And they'd say, well, can you help me? So I actually helped other people get their works written and published and then distributed. And I didn't want any of the proceeds. I just wanted to be able to put my label on them. And they're like, that's fine. Free 99, I'll take it. So I helped one author make a CD. And she did really well for herself. She actually got kind of a speaking gig on a radio show from it. So, I mean, that's kind of neat, But it was just basically coming up with a name, ripping off the Band-Aid and plugging it, and then enforcing it. And that's the same with anything that you want people ex to be exposed to, right?
Absolutely. And it's that evolution, right? When you first started and where you are today. But I think that's just how life is because new experiences bring new opportunities. And as you are putting together your fifth book now, I know you don't just write, you also work in the financial sector. And I think it's so important to highlight women in finance because there's not as many of us as I would like to see talking about it. There's a lot, but I feel like they're hiding under rocks. It's like, come out, let's talk about it. So I'd love to learn a little bit more of what that's looked like for you going from writing to now in the financial world. Well, you're in both, but.
Absolutely. So I moved to Colorado from Austin, Texas. I was a kindergarten teacher for 10 years and I loved it. I actually was kind of good at it. It was really fun. And I was plugging along, but I honestly thought that I had two options for my retirement plan: a van by the river.
I mean, that's really known here, you know?
It's known here. Or just die in the classroom, just be that old lady Back in my day, we used to use Zoom, you know, that lady that would sub for me sometimes. And I'm just like, oh, please kill me now. And so, but I was fine with either one of those because I was doing what I loved. I was being a part of the community. I was still able to write. I was still able to do the things that I love to do. And I had some security, you know. A lot of people say teachers don't get paid enough. Well, duh. But we also had really good benefits. And I lived below my means, even in Austin, Texas, as a single mom. I lived below my means and we were okay. We were okay. We were okay. But one day, my ex-husband went to sleep and didn't wake up. And he was only 59. And we discovered him, had to go through the EMS coming, go through probate, through all of that. And of course, I made him have a life insurance plan. But it was the old kind of life insurance, which is just death benefit only. But that was great because that actually gave us kind of an umbrella for the first time in our lives. So we paid off student loans, we bought a car, we deciphered where we were going to do. And then we were looking to buy a home. And at that time, the market was still is, but it's really insane. And I just wasn't feeling that trigger. You know, I had a realtor showing me a couple homes, and I just, something in my heart was just saying, no, this is not. And of course, everything just fell apart. They were being picked up, all that. So then the boys and I sat down. I have two boys, 21 and 23, and they're my babies and we're best friends. And I said, guys, I don't know if I really want to live here anymore. And they said, us too. We just weren't sure how to tell you. And so that was a good one. And so I said, well, let's go shop. You know, I said, I miss the mountains. Growing up in Taos, I miss that. I miss the quiet rural area. But I also don't want to live in the boonies because I know what that's like. So let's go check out Colorado and see what happens. Well, I have some buddies out here and some spattering of family. And so we went all the way from Durango all the way up to Fort Collins and we landed on Westminster. Jump forward, moved here, we got situated. But I was actually going to start a company with bookkeeping. Turns out I don't really like bookkeeping.
Least you found out before.
Yes, me and QuickBooks are anyway. So I was already in networking. I was already getting clients. I was already freaking out because I didn't know what I was doing because the academy I signed on to wasn't really fostering that. So I went to this networking group and I met someone from Five Rings Financial. And Eric Hovey, I love you, bro, invited the boys and I to one of our Money 101 workshops. And we were blown away. I sat in the front seat. Had my little journal, I was writing everything down. And I had also, just a little test, brought Tony Robbins' Money Game, set it on the table. And I was like, I want this. And Trevor Jackson, our executive vice president, was like, that's what we do. And I said, I'm in. I'm in. So we sat down with Eric after the meeting. We were just so giddy. And we figured out what we were wanting to do. We wanted to make sure that we preserved what was left of the inheritance and make sure that it was secured and it was never going to lose money. And it was still going to gain, but it wasn't going to lose. And I thought, this is just magic. How do people not know about this? And I was able to roll over my shrinking pension because I lost 20K in 2018. That's fun. And I was able to roll that over into something that was secure, that would never lose money. And would just grow, and I could actually retire with dignity. So I had more options. And if that isn't a calling to make people aware that there are options for you, and you don't have to have a big stack of cash, you can actually get started with minimal payments a month. And compounding interest is one of the greatest discoveries of the world. And some smart guy named Einstein came up with a quote about that. But, you know, compounding interest can really benefit you. So then I was a client and I was so excited and I was telling everyone about it. And Eric's like, you know, I could pay you to tell people about this. And I thought, that's cool. Let's do that. But as I got more and more into the culture of the company, I mean, these people genuinely care about you. I had this high person CEO come and hug me and ask me, you know, how my boys were doing. They knew my boys. He knew my name. It's like a family. And our home office is in Littleton. I didn't realize how spoiled I was that I have him. Anyway, so that's where I got into the financial industry is because I realized that most women, most people in middle America do not know what options they have.
It's so valuable what you're saying, because I think it is just good to know what your options are, because if you don't know, you don't know. And it goes back to the information, just even with writing, being able to know, okay, talking to different people, knowing what's out there, because there's a lot of information out there, but what do you actually absorb and what does make sense for you and your financial well-being, basically? Because at the end of the day, it's your money, and where do you want it to go? How does it function? How does it work for you versus against you? And I'm really curious, because when it comes to the financial world, there are a lot of unknowns and there are a lot of stats about things. But what do you think is one of the biggest misconceptions when it comes to like financial well-being?
That it's unobtainable. That's what rich people do. And I think people to have a very unhealthy, I know I did, have a very unhealthy relationship with money. And I grew up, my father was a professional. And we should have been living really well, but we were dirt poor. And it was so ironic that this incredible veterinarian could make so much money and us just struggle so hard. And I really think that it was generational. I really do. That, oh, that's what my father did, so that's what I do. And that's even something that we talk about in Money 101. I'm going to do what my parents did, I'm going to put it in the bank. Or I'm going to put it in the market. And so, in order for you to actually break that generational continuance, if it's successful, keep doing it by all means. But a lot of us are not successful. A lot of us are not millionaires, right? So, being able to set up ourselves in conjunction with what the wealthy people do that's available to middle America, that's pretty incredible. And that's why I feel like a crusader. I get jiggity about it. Sometimes you can put your hand up and say, stop talking.
No, I love it. I think I'm glad you brought up the generational aspect, because it's also, especially when you go to school, you get a job and you think you're going to have a retirement. And I'm from a family of former educators. They're retired now, my parents. But what teachers make, it's disgusting, to be quite honest, especially in Florida. I mean, I don't know about Colorado because I don't know too many teachers, but I don't think it's much better. But regardless, I think it's important just to know that it's not just taking care of our physical and mental health, but our financial health too. And that's why I think it's so important what you are doing and educating. I mean, that's what I do with Solar. We educate people, we talk about it, and they don't want it. Cool. At least now they have the right information so they can make an informed decision on what they want to do with their home, because that's their like sanctuary. Same with their money. That's what's going to help them survive. And I'm curious, because I know you've worked with a lot of different people, but do you have a success story you could share when it comes to the financial aspect? You don't have to give any names or anything, but.
Oh, yeah. Well, I wouldn't anyway, just out of respect, but success story. Besides myself, yeah, actually, wow. I'm scrolling down my clients here.
I know you have a lot.
And I think the biggest part, just to touch on real quick, about the women being in our in this industry, our company is 60% women. Just throw that out there, because we're an untapped resource, really. We're problem finders. We will find the problem. And that's why I think we are so successful in this company, is because we see the problem and we solve the problem. And usually we'll have to, sometimes a team needs you, and sometimes you need the team. So having that culture to be able to support each other is great. But okay, well, just recently I had this client, Spit Spot Health. She works for a great company. She's young, I think 24, 25-ish, just dynamic lady. She's got a great career. She's doing good. She doesn't have a retirement plan with her company, and they don't meet the state requirement of having five or more on a pension plan. So kind of on your own, right? Also, they don't have health insurance. And so that was the other part of it too, is like, well, what happens if I get sick? What do I do? They kind of have an emergency plan that they all kind of pool together for. And a lot of companies are starting to do that, which I think is great. But when the bills come, what's going to help her? What's going to take care of her? So she's been nervous about this. I mean, she's in spit by health, like I said, but there's always that car accident. There's always that diagnosis that's just kind of looming over all of us. We're nine times more likely to be diagnosed with something, right? So one of the things that our company does is we not only help you build wealth, but we protect it with something called living benefits. So if you were to, unfortunately, have a diagnosis and you would need other financial support, most people would just go to their retirement plan or lack thereof, or take out a loan. And that's what 50% of the bankruptcies are happening in this country is because someone got sick. So one of the major key components of our plan that we really want to emphasize when we meet with our clients is, hey, you can get a policy really easily right now that'll help you. And eventually it'll grow with you, but it's pennies to the dollar for you now, and you already can qualify and you'll have the living benefits. So it's not just life insurance, it's living benefits insurance. So if you get diagnosed, you can use up to 90% of your overall death benefit to help pay for the bills. It's life insurance you don't have to die to use. So we got to do that for her, but she also had a budget that exceeded what was needed to have the living benefits. So we were able to put her in a tax-free retirement plan, and it's called a flex account. So she could do a little bit here and more over here, and then she can manage how she wants it to go. And it's just this incredible product that we have that helps tax-free retirement for even just young starting off kiddos who just want to make sure that they cover their backs, you know? So I think that's a huge success story.
Yes, it is. I know you have so many others, but I love that you brought this one up in particular because there's a lot of entrepreneurs listening, more people transitioning from 9 to 5 into entrepreneurship. And a lot of times there is no retirement. I mean, my retirement's Bitcoin and some other things, but
Good job.
yes. I mean, my husband's like drilled it in me. Bitcoin is number one for like a lot of our financial aspects, but I think it's important to realize that a lot of entrepreneurs are struggling sometimes where they're like, okay, I can't afford health insurance. That was us a few years ago. It's like, okay, well, we got to pay for certain things versus like health insurance. But I love that you, again, it goes back to having options. I think that's just that peace of mind knowing that you're taking care of, your loved ones are taken care of. If any, God forbid, anything happens with diagnosis or if you have children, all those factors play a role, and it's just get yourself educated first and foremost so you can. And I'm curious because you did a thumbs up with the Bitcoin. I'm curious what your thoughts on Bitcoin.
Well, I am the least educated on it, but I always give people a thumbs up if they are making an effort to making a change in their life, whatever it is. You know, a lot of times when I sit down with people, they're like, "Oh, so you're an advisor, right?" And I'm like, "No, I'm a consultant. I don't have a license to help you lose money." And they're like, "I know that sounds kind of snappy, but I'm just saying I partner with a lot of other people in our industry." Because if they want, is say I ask you, what's your risk tolerance? And you say, I'm a 7. I'm like, I got a guy that can help you with your risk. You like to ride the roller coaster. Awesome sauce. Just give me just a little slice of that pie so I can make sure it's protected. You can see the ups and downs over here, but at least you know that this part is growing and safe and not going to cost you in the end. So, I give a thumbs up to everybody who makes an incredible effort. But you know, it's such a new thing, and I've seen so many success stories from it that I think, you know, the fact that you started kind of at a ground level with it, it's just phenomenal. I bet I could learn a lot from you, actually.
Well, I know a few things. Evan probably knows a little bit more than me, but I'm starting to understand it a lot more and being able to explain it a little bit clearer, but I still have a lot more to learn. And I think that's a beautiful thing is just being able to continue to evolve. And there's going to be other things, other avenues, but it's having at least something in place that you're protected. And that's what I know you embody. If the moment I met you, that's just what you exude. And I think it's important that people just get the facts, what really makes sense for you and your lifestyle, but really looking at your finances, because I used to be a marriage and family therapist. And a lot of times, outside of like other issues outside of communication, financial was one of the main reasons people got divorced or were in my office. Because just people weren't communicating about the finances or having something in place. So why not remove that barrier, have the conversation? And I love that it's 60% female based as well, the company, because I think that's just a testament to continuing to learn because a lot of like generations prior, women weren't really even, I think, what was it? I heard the other day, it was like, I think 1978 was the first time a woman could have a credit card. I could get the date wrong. But I was like, what? Which is crazy because my mom was like in college college or right out of college, I think, at that time. And I'm like, oh my God, that's just nuts to me. So I think we've come a long way and we're going to continue to go a long way, I think, because more women are becoming the breadwinners in their families, being able to control the finances, even as an independent woman as well, but just having the facts of it all.
I love that. I love that. That's exactly right. I mean, I know that that's one of the reasons why my marriage failed. We had totally differing views on money. Turns out I married my father. He had no idea. Oh, you think you go all the way around and you end up right back where you were. But that was a big thing. You know, I did the Dave Ramsey thing and we had our envelopes, you know, and I was like, yay, we have a plan. And he's like, I hate this. And I'm like, and so it caused a lot of friction in our life, for sure, for sure. When he died, he had $16 in his account before he got paid. So clearly paycheck to paycheck. And that was just so hard for me. I was just so insecure. So I need some stability, you know. And I think a lot of women face that. A lot of women face that. And men, you know. How many trips to Target do you have to go to, girl? Stop.
Target and Starbucks.
That's
Guilty
the
as
other thing
charged.
too. That's another thing too. We don't want to cripple people's lifestyle, you know. It's
No.
like, no, don't give up your latte. Don't give up the things that bring you joy. Don't do that. Let's figure out a plan over here that doesn't affect your well-being, that doesn't affect your marriage. But let's all be together. And I love having couples come to our Money 101. I love it. And it's like date night.
Yeah.
Kick, you know, we buy you dinner and you get to sit. You don't have to cook. You have to clean, you get to learn in 1 hour. Forget about it. It's great. We even had it on Valentine's Day one time.
Perfect timing.
Was great.
We kindled the
Wow.
love. Our financial aspects too.
Save some money this Valentine's Day. Yeah.
Think that's important, and continuing to have these conversations is what it's about, because the more we know, we can make those decisions that are going to help for the long haul, but also for the greater good of relationships and just your relationship first and foremost with money. Because that's that first relationship, your relationship with yourself and how it impacts everything around you, because that's going to impact your mood and your emotions and the choices you make and everything else based off of your financial aspects. I mean, I struggled when I was a therapist making 15 an hour in Southern California. I was like, how does anybody live like this? Of course, that was my experience, and I will always say that till the end of time. But at the end of the day, it's looking at how are you able to make those choices from such a clear mindset if you are like just in survival versus thriving mode and just knowing that your money's safe or working for you, not against you.
Exactly. Ah, couldn't have said it better.
I
You know, and
know.
I think one of the ways that we foster our women in our family, in our company, it's one of the
It's a
same things.
family. It's a
It
family.
is a family. We have Why Women in Wealth too. And Why Women in Wealth, it's a trademarked group event now. And it's free networking and we have wine and women get together and they build things. They just do because we just collaborate. So in fact, we're having one tonight. And it's exciting, you know, we get to get sponsored. We have sponsors for food and wine, and they get to talk about their business. And last month, we had panelists from male-dominated industries like automotive repair, construction, a brewery owner, and there's one more.
Oh, was there a solar one?
There should have been.
Love that though.
Yes. But they got to sit and we got to ask them questions and learn about their journey and how difficult it was, you know? And yeah, and so being able to really expose how successful we can be when we pull together and support each other is, I think, the success that we have in our company.
I love it. I feel it. Every time you talk, I feel it. But I'm really curious because you've already given a lot of insight. But if you could give an entrepreneur that's listening, that they're starting on their journey of entrepreneurship or just in that first 5 years, I would even say, what advice would you give to them?
Don't stop believing. Don't stop believing. Oh gosh. Ooh. Sorry. My heart is really big and it's right next to my eyes, so it leaks. I'm sorry. Oh, okay.
I
My students always used to ask, "Miss Carlin, are you okay?" I'm like, "I'm just super happy, okay?" But don't stop believing. I mean, every day, especially when I was first getting started as a writer and as an entrepreneur, especially in this industry, it's scary and it's uncomfortable. And if it was safe and comfortable, then everybody would be successful, right? And I just had a great meeting this morning. We were accountability partners in our company. So we meet once a week and we talk about things. And I said, you know, there's no accident that Mike Wilk, the CEO, he has Don't Stop Believing from Journey Play at the end of all our trainings. Don't stop believing. Don't stop believing in yourself. Don't stop believing in your craft. Don't stop believing in your purpose. Don't stop believing in your higher being, your higher purpose. Don't stop believing. Just don't. And when you feel like you are starting to stop, starting to feel the doubt, which will creep in and attack you at all angles, the Bible promises that, right? The enemy comes to steal, kill, and destroy. I mean, it's all over in all religions that there's some other force that's trying to pull you back and keep you in that safe, comfortable spot, right? And this is where the warriors are forged. This is where the rubber meets the road. This is where the true champion of the story comes through, right? It's at the beginning, they're faced with this challenge, like the Luke Skywalker story, you know, like you gotta go save the world. But they have to leave the desert. They have to leave where the comfort is and go on this adventure and make the willingness to do it. And all through it, you're gonna be challenged in who you are and what you're capable of and who loves you and who supports you and all of that. You just have to really just don't have anything but unwavering faith and belief.
Oh, just in all the feels, because it's so true. Like it's easy to doubt yourself, the uncertainty, the ups, downs. We call it the solar coaster that we're on. And it's real. But I feel like it's an emotional roller coaster. Just anything that you're starting, even if it's a new job or you have to take a side job in order to fund your dream of what you're trying to build and focused on building and doing, not even trying but doing. But at the end of the day, it goes back to not giving up on yourself and just knowing that you are more than capable of doing it if your heart is on it. Look how much you've accomplished and you could have given up. You could have just wrote one poetry book and been like, I'm done, no more. But now you're on five, which is crazy. And I cannot wait to read it, everyone else to read it. But I think it's just that accumulation of how we evolve. And I think that's been the thread throughout this whole conversation is just continue to allow yourself to evolve, be flexible and adaptable. I'm talking to myself directly.
Exactly.
I'm a
How
born
happy.
perfectionist.
That's what all these post-it notes are. They're like, don't stop putting that.
Yes, I have one. Like, don't give up. It's all over my screen, my vision board. But
It.
that's what
Yeah,
it's
well,
about.
and but I am writing another book. It's a nonfiction book.
Yes. Tell
Yeah,
us.
I totally
Okay.
forgot to mention this. So this is where I really think maybe we should revisit and I can tell you that process. But it's called Be the Bravest Person You Know. And it was one of the reasons why I felt so empowered to share a message is because so many other people have the message of what bravery is. And so I started interviewing people for it. And because I wanted to know what bravery really meant, because I was not feeling it. Just like you said, I was going through that doubt. And I thought, well, if I talk to enough people and find out what bravery really is, maybe I can emulate it in my life. And so that's the next book that's kind of going sideways with parallel with the other book. But yeah, I mean, it's incredible what people have to overcome, and yet they do. And yet they do. And the only way that you fail is if you quit, right?
Yeah, it's simple as that. I mean, easier said than done, of course, but I think the biggest part is taking those steps. And I do a lot of trainings for the California prison system for therapists and supervisors. And one of the things is just really looking at, okay, what is that goal for somebody to achieve? And, you know, there's a lot of hurdles they've had to overcome, and it's the smallest step is the biggest milestone for them to have that motivation to keep going and not giving up, because you're going to get knocked down. You got to believe you're going to get knocked down. However, it's what you do when you get back up. Like, do you get back up? And that's been the story of your resilience, knowing you now as well, and just what you shared, the ins and outs a little bit, but knowing it's getting up. Because if you don't get up, then you can't achieve what you're meant to achieve. If we had stopped what we were doing, you wouldn't be on book five and six. You wouldn't be helping so many people with their financial wealth and being able to look at, they have the opportunity to do so. I wouldn't be able to help people reduce their electricity bills and have a cleaner planet, you know, and just even these interviews if I had given up. So I think it's just looking at your life, how you can really maneuver that in the best way that works for you. But that starts with being open to receiving feedback and also creating a safe space.
Yeah, and find your tribe. By all means, find your tribe. Whether it's just this weirdo on Instagram that runs up with a fan and says, "You can do it." Yeah, I'm calling him out. He was great. Or a friend, you know, that encourages you and stretches you and asks you to be on a podcast. Thank you.
Of course. Well, I've been so enjoying this conversation, but where can people find you? Find your books. I know you're going to be, they're coming out. We'll link that once they are out, but if you could let us know as well as for the financial aspect.
Thank you. I'm pretty easy to find. My name is pretty unusual. I'm going to kind of rebrand a little bit and just call it K squared. Like everything's K squared. But yeah, so if you just Google my name, I have my LinkedIn and everything else, and I can definitely share that with you as well. But ChristianaCarlin@FiveRingsFinancial.com is my email, and I'm a living benefits expert. So if you put Christiana Carlin, my website will show up right away under living benefits. And yeah, and as far as my book goes, I will definitely, you know, be pushing and letting you know which avenue I chose and when my book launch is going to be. And I can't wait to see you there. It'll be a big party.
Oh, I can't wait for it. But I so appreciate you coming on, just sharing your beautiful energy, your heart and soul, everything you've done from writing and really allowing the words to be expressed to now helping people financially really see how they have those opportunities to not struggle like a lot of us have in the past.
Yeah.
Awesome.
To the top. Let's do it.
To the top. Yes. Well, thank you again for coming on. Make sure to like, subscribe, comment below what was the biggest takeaway from today. And we'll see you on the next episode.
Thank you so much, Carolyn. I appreciate you.
Of course, I appreciate you.